Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Incredibly Strange Films and Film and Stuff, and we're here with one of our favorite film directors and producers and actors, and he does it all on a micro budget. We like to welcome back Joel Weinkoop. Joel, nice to have you with us again.
Hey, man, thank you so very much. It's very cool to be here.
So, basically, I was introduced to you by my former partner Stephen Ronquillo, Joel, you've been at this for a while. So just give us a little background on how it got started and maybe a highlight one or two of the older films that you did and just how you really started with this, because I know you and Tim Ritter, of course, connected very early. So just give us a little background on that.
Yeah, just when I was a kid, when we moved from Minnesota to Florida, I got interested in like Godzilla and King Kong, and that Godzilla was a man in a suit and Kong was a little 14-inch armature. I learned about stop motion reading like Monsters of Film Land. And then I got interested. I said, oh, it'd be fun to make movies. And my dad heard me say that. He probably thought, well, do I want my son to get some girlfriend and get her pregnant and get on drugs, or should I go buy him a movie camera and steer him into movie making movies? So my dad went and bought me a Super 8 camera at one of the stores where he went to all the time. And he got a camera, and I think he got a chain tripod, and he got two rolls of Super 8 film cartridges tossed in with it with the camera, and bought that. I think it was like $40. And then I just took the camera out and started shooting stuff. And my neighbor at the time was Tim Ritter. He was like 8 years old, and he let me use his dinosaur for one of my movies. And then when about, I don't know, a year after that, I started making, my neighbor Steve Campbell and I made the $8 million boy meets the invisible transport boy. And Tim was like, hey, you guys can use my shed. My dad will drive the van. And we're like, oh, Tim, thanks, man. So Tim's in the movie. In fact, that's on a new release I have now. It's called When I Was Young, the Super 8 movies, the Super 8 films of Joel D. Weinkoop. It's 2 hours of my Super 8 stuff from back in the 70s and 80s. And one of them on there is The Bionic Boy, which has got Tim in it, and then the Galanium, Monster Isle, which was our first thing we did with that camera. As soon as I got it, we made a little dinosaur movie. But that started it all, and then making the Super 8 movies. And then I kind of got away from it a little while for like 10 years. And I was about to go back with it with some friends I worked with at FEC News, just making like comical little videos. And my nephew Terry called me that night on the phone and he goes, hey, Uncle Joel, there's a guy at my school named Tim Ritter and he's selling a movie called Day of the Reaper. Is he the Tim Ritter you used to take care of? And I go, I don't know. Probably. It would make sense. He goes, well, here's his phone number if you want to call him. And I said, okay. So I called him up. I talked to his mom. It's funny because I kind of was thinking back to when he was a kid or something. I go, well, Mrs. Ritter, can Jim come out and play? She's like, he's 17 years old. Yes, he can call you. I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot. You know, I told her it was Joel Weinkoop from across the street and all that stuff from the past. But, yeah, then Jim called me up about 11 o'clock that night, and we got together the next day. And that's when we started planning, like, we could shoot something together. And we actually had my boss's video camera from FEC News, and he came over. We shot a little something, and I wish we had it today, but I think Tim said, oh, man, I'm sorry, I take Chelsea Blues over. I was like, oh, no. But that's what all got it started, and then it was shortly after that we decided we'd do a movie together, and we came up with the name and the company name, which was, I think Tim came up with, like Twisted, and I came up with Illusions, and we were like, yeah, Twisted Illusions. And then we shot, you know, our short stories, Twisted Illusions, and then we sent them out to we got in touch with Jeff Miller from Peerless Films. And the weird thing about it was the guy we got his number from was the guy that was embezzling Jeff's money from his movies because they had the same film company name, and this new guy, Al, he was taking all the money and he got found out later. But Jeff was cool about it. He goes, I'm not going to put you in jail, man, but you got to pay me all this money back. And he, so Al's the one that turned this on to Jeff because of this whole embezzlement scheme. And then Tim went up there in Chicago, took up his script, showed it to Jeff, and before you know it, Truth and Air is being made. I had left. I was in Pensacola. And Tim called me and goes, hey, man, you better get down here if you want to be involved. And I'm like, yeah, cool, because I just thought I was going nowhere. Tim and I have conversations about this all the time, how he called me in Pensacola, and I go, oh, you're still beating a dead horse there. And he goes, yeah, I feel like it, but I'm still trying. And I go, well, good luck. I had to move here. So Tim pulled it together, him and Al Nicolosi got it all going. And I came back, and actually when I talked to Jeff Miller, I called him on the phone, and we were telling him about Truth at Air, and that's when he told us. He goes, send it to me, and I'll look at it. And that's what really started it, because once we made that phone call, he was interested in doing it.
Good. So you know, the films that I know that you and Tim and people were, particularly in the 90s, during the DIY, do-it-yourself, And tell us just a little bit about doing these early films. What all did you do? Because you did basically everything. I know that. But tell our audience what all you've done over the years in film production and so on and so forth.
It just started. That's where it started because, you know, once we did Twisted Illusions, the guy liked that, and the short story, of course, was Truth or Dare, and then Jeff was the money guy. Jeff had all the money, and Tim, of course, went up to Chicago, him and Al, and they went into his office, and they made the big business deal where they were going to make the movie. Like I said, Tim came back and got in touch with me. I came back to Jupiter, and the very next day, or after the day I got there, we were in this big office building with Jeff Miller, who was the money guy, and Roberta McElroy, and then Yale Wilson from Death Wish and those movies. He came down. So we're all in this big room, and I just was, you know, amazed. I'm like, man, I'm really sitting here with the hot shots here. And so it was cool. I remember Tim was always pushing Jeff to get Dee Snider for the head psycho in Truth or Dare. And he also wanted to do a scene where a pit bull latched onto Mike Strauber, and they cut the pit bull's head off. And when Mike Strauber went in the house, the pit bull was going to have his head cut off, but his head would still be on the killer's arm, still chewing at it while the killer's killing everybody. The pit bull would be hanging onto his wrist. Of course, we didn't do that. But, that's what started it, because then we did Truth or Dare, and I acted in it. I was a property master. I was a stunt guy. I was the production assistant, so I had, like, four roles plus acting in it. And, like, Steve Feldon was the assistant director. He was like, I think it's amazing you're doing all these things, but, you know, can you do this acting too? And I was supposed to be the Mike Strauber, but I remember going out with Yale and saying, look, Yale, I can really get this cool look, you know. And he goes, well, I can't stand around waiting on you to get this cool look. And we already got John Brace. We're talking to him, and he's from the Burt Reynolds Institute. So we're going to use him, and then Tim was kind of saying, well, it's really, the part's really made for Joel. And they go, well, we're using this guy, John Brace, so it doesn't matter the part's written for your buddy or not, he's not doing it. But I was, you know, a production assistant, and then I worked up the stuntman because I started working with Bob Shelley, who did Ghostbusters, and I worked with Jerry Berry, who was did Prom Night and Heavenly Kid and Code of Silence and all these movies. And so I was working, you know, with them, doing professional, you know, stunts. In fact, Jerry at one point asked me, he goes, sure you don't want to do this stunt? As we're chaining to the front of the car where he's going to do a crash into another car, and then the car's going to blow up, and he's going to get out on fire. And he goes, you want to do it, Joel? And I go, no, I'll let you handle this one, Jerry. But, I mean, it was just one thing into the other, because as soon as Truth or Dare was done, Tim was already planning to do Killing Spree, and he wanted asbestos to be in it. And, they had auditions, and I just came down for an audition for the TV repairman. I had to audition like everybody else. And even like Joel Harlow, who got the Academy Award for J.J. Abrams' Star Trek, he was there. You know, he worked with us before all these other, you know, big deal movies. And him and Mark Peterson, I think it was, they said to Tim, they go, I don't know about this Joel Weinkoop guy. He's not very good. I don't think you should use him. So Tim was kind of like, no, he's my buddy. I got to use him in it, man. But then later, Mark Peterson, he told me, and so did Joel Harlow, they were like, man, you did great. We didn't think you'd be able to do this, but you did an excellent job. And I was like, oh, that was cool to hear. And then after that, it just kept going. I mean, it was, then we went straight into Killing Spree, and then I said, oh, I want to make a movie now. I want to make a karate movie. And I went, because I was in martial arts, and I was kickboxing. So I went straight into writing my own script, and my nephew came up with the name of it. Mark Heidelberg came up with the name, calling it Lost Faith. And then when I was working on Lost Faith, Tim had told me, he goes, are you done with Lost Faith now? And I go, well, yeah, I'm done. He goes, no, are you absolutely 100% sure you're done with Lost Faith? And I go, yeah, it's all done. I went everywhere I can go for it. I printed the boxes. I borrowed the money from my mom. I paid my mom back. I'm making money on Lost Faith. Everything's going great. And he goes, cool. I go, why? He goes, because we're starting our new movie. It's called Wicked Games, Truth or Dare Part 2. And I went, oh, cool. So we went straight into that. And that, I mean, they just led one to the other until, you know, and then where I was living, I ended up moving to Tampa after Tim moved away, but we had done Dirty Cop, No Donut, and Screaming for Sanity, and Kevin Lindemith's Alien Agenda, Endangered Species. I did Marcus Cook's Rot. You know, it was Tim and I doing stuff, but then when I moved to Tampa, it opened up the doors for me, and then we had an article in Fangoria, Notes from the Underground, and just a whole new world opened up for me from that Fangoria ad, and I think moving to Tampa, because then I'm working for all these filmmakers in Tampa, and then I'm going to Missouri to do Clownado with Todd Sheets, and I'm going to Iowa to do Indiana to do Postmortem America 2021 with Cameron Scott, and then I'm going to Iowa to do a movie there, Body in a Dumpster, and then I'm going to Kentucky to shoot the Alien Conspiracy. So once I got over here, and of course that Fangoria ad, I think that's when it just kind of all blew up and became, you know, super busy, and then I got, then people started, Alternative Cinema ran an article in the magazine calling me the King of the B movies, and which was just kind of, you know, cool to have some kind of title relating you. And then of course everybody else just picked up to it. And when someone says it, he goes, "Yeah, you're King of the B movies." And I'm like, "No, I'm just a guy trying to enjoy making movies and hoping it'll really catch on, you know, bigger than it is now." And that's still what I'm doing now. I've done a whole bunch of movies, and probably more than the next guy. And, you know, I'm happy to be doing it and making some money at it, not Tom Cruise money, but I'm making some money at it. And, you know, I'm able to go on and, you know, keep making movies and working on other people's movies. And it doesn't really seem to stop. And then, I did my whole Craiglon Incident Part 1, 2, and 3 because of COVID hit the United States. And I said, they can't, these people on TV can't tell me to stay in my house. I'm going to go outside on my front porch and make a movie. So it starts out with a little 3-minute movie turned into a 6-hour extravaganza with 3 different movies. And and then of course I've always been hooked up with Phil Herman along with Tim Ritter also, but Phil and I lately have just worked on so much. Then we did Horror Tales Part 2 because we did the first Horror Tales way back in 97, and we did Horror Tales Part 2, and then right after Horror Tales I stopped working on the Craiglon Incident Part 2 Aftermath to finish Horror Tales, because I was editing that, and then I had to get back to Craiglon Incident Aftermath, Part 2, and then I was into Part 3, and then we broke off of that, and I started working on Horror Tales, and I was editing that, so we did Horror Tales 666, Horror Tales .666 Part 3, and I just finished that and handed that over to our distributor. So, yes, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff I'm not saying because it would be boring and everybody like, oh, why doesn't he shut up? He's talking too much. But, yeah, just a ton of stuff that'll take you all the way from me from 1984 right up, you know, till now, you know, like 100 and over 150 movies at least.
Well, I was just about to say that. You know, you've got nearly, between everything you've done, you've got over 200 credits on IMDb. It is amazing, and I think I have a new name for you. I'm going to call you the micro-budget whirling dervish because you do not stop. I don't think you could stop if you wanted to. Seriously.
I really don't think. I just told myself maybe this is the time I could stop and start working on the, because I had a book that I started long ago and it's just sitting here. And I'm like, maybe I should just kind of get back to that. But then Phil was like, okay, now the Craiglin Incident Part 3 is done, and Horror Tales Part 3 is done, and we're planning Horror Tales Part 4, and now we're going to do Doomsday Stories. And I'm like, oh, man. And he's like, and we got the Owen Brothers, and you got to finish doing Beast Mode, and then you're doing the one for your wife. And I'm like, oh, God. So, yeah, every time I think, okay, this will be it, there's like four more in the distant future that are like floating over me that I'm like, oh, yeah, I got to do those, and I think I can do them and get done and then concentrate on the book. And then here comes six more movies. I'm doing something for Gator Blade Films for Sean Donahue. Kathy and I are both doing something for his. What is that? Satan? Something? Yeah, Satan. Yeah, something. So that's the next thing that I'm that we're both working on. And then also one for Rick Danford, The Nightmare Collection 2, because he called me and he goes, Joel, I really want you to be in this because it's about this. Well, I don't even want to give the story away. But he goes, it really has to be you, and you'll be teamed up with Chris Segrati. And I'm like, Chris, huh? Well, Satan lives, it is strong. So we're doing that. And then I'm doing this thing for Rick Danford. And then retry. Then what's the other? Oh, and then a kind of a prequel to Creep that I'm doing with Sean Donahue with the permission of Tim Ritter. So that'll be next too. It ties in with Descort Service 3, which I'm in all three of the Descort movies. So yeah, it's just keeps building with what I'm doing. I just keep working on these movies and stuff. Where if I wanted to say, okay, I'm done. You know, I'd have like six or seven things lined up, and I didn't have to tell everybody, look, I don't want to do it no more. But you get done with one thing, and it's like, okay, now I'm, I went through so much on the Craiglin Incident 3, and then once I did finally finish it and get onto Horror Tales .666 Part 3, that wasn't as bad, but the Craiglin Incident was driving me crazy. My editor would shut down. Kathy can attest to this. She hears me screaming and yelling at all hours of the night. But when I'm back in my office, the editor shuts down. The program will shut down, or the whole computer will just shut down, or things will just disappear off the timeline. And I'm like, where did that go? I was 1 minute from being done, and now I have to start over. And sometimes it would save it, and sometimes it wouldn't. So when I finally got done, and then I was finding mistakes, and I did it over 10 times, and I was adding ADR and doing video effects, and I said, if I don't stop, I'm going to screw this up. I just need to put it to rest. And I finally got the best copy I could get. When I looked at it, I go, I think this is it. It looks good. It's perfect. And other than something I learned from Tim Ritter, he goes, otherwise, if you don't just stop and finish it, you could go on forever and ever trying to make something better. You could spend 85 years on a movie going, I've got to make it perfect, and then you die and your movie never comes out. Might as well just let it go.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Now you just released Craiglin 3 Annihilation. Tell us a little bit about the Craiglin series and what it's all about and how it came about and how you shot during COVID and during the quarantine and that, how you all put this together?
Well, it was funny. It was just like I said. When COVID came, it was March of 2020. Just like we're watching a movie on television, like Contagion and Outbreak and stuff. It came the same way. It was not in our country. And then the next day, the next 15 minutes later, it's in our country. So right away on television, they're talking about how it came from China, blah, blah, blah. Don't go out. Don't go anywhere. You're going to get infected. You're going to die. Don't go downtown. Don't go outside your house. Don't go anywhere. Don't leave your home. You have to wear a mask. You don't have to wear a mask. So they were saying that so much on TV, and I was like, I told Kathy, I go, are they saying I can't go downtown if I want? She goes, no, baby, you can go downtown, but what they don't want you going downtown and hanging out and walking around. They would rather you just stay home, but you can go get gas or you can go get a Coke. You can do all the stuff you do. They just don't want you hanging out. And I go, well, that's dumb. They can't tell me what to do. I said, and I grabbed my camera and I go, come on, we're going to go shoot a movie. And she goes, what? I go, I'm going to shoot a movie on the front porch. And she goes, oh, okay. I go, hold the camera. Now, shoot me talking to the camera, and then you're going to switch places with me, and I'm going to be like, so it looks like I'm talking to myself. I'll switch shirts, and then I'm going to cut that together, and I made a little movie on the porch. And she goes, okay, I guess. And then I did that. And then the next day I said, shoot this. I'm going to be like I'm talking to somebody. And I just was blabbing away. And then I called Phil Herman. And I said, hey, Phil, why don't you do these lines for me? I'm just doing something stupid. And anyway, this escalated. And then I called Sean C. Phillips in San Diego. And I said, Sean, you want to get on board with this stupid movie I'm doing? And he's like, yeah, Joel. So he did some stuff. I went in and I started cutting it together. And it was really silly. And I leaned over and I told my wife, I said, do you want a part in this? And she goes, no, I don't think so, baby. And I go, okay, I just wanted to ask. So meanwhile, I'm keep making the movie and everything. And before you know it, this stupid little 3-minute thing on my front porch turned into more than 6 hours of footage that I had to cut down for 2 hours for each movie. And as I got about halfway through the first movie, and Kathy sees me like intensely working with Debbie Rashan and Lloyd Kaufman and people here locally here in town and put this big thing together, and all of a sudden she's tapping me on the shoulder going, I changed my mind, can I be in this movie? And I go, yeah, I thought you didn't want to be in it, because I didn't, but I do now. It's really looking good. So, yeah, and then it was COVID, so I couldn't get together with anybody. You weren't supposed to. And so I started bringing people in from all across the country and overseas. A couple people I did here in town, Terry Hopkins, I went and met him at this mall that's partially abandoned. I shot his scenes from like 10 feet away. Then I went over to Bob Glazer's house over in St. Pete. And then went over to Bob Glazer, shot his stuff again at 10 feet away. And then I did a thing with Warren Madden, played one of the superheroes. And I went over to his house and we shot that over there. And that went pretty good. And then the rest of the people, like I said, were coming from all over the country, sending me their stuff. Sean sent me his stuff from San Diego, Phil from New York. And then pretty soon, I had all this footage, and it was scripted because I said, okay, after the stuff I did on my front porch, I said was, being, silly and it's fun and stuff. I said, but I got to make this thing, got to have some cohesive manner. So I would take the scenes I already shot, and then I would write the returning dialogue to my character, and then I would send that to Phil and send it to Sean. And I said, this is what I need you to say because it's got to match the stuff I'm saying. So, okay, there it is, kind of a scripted thing, and then everybody's sending me their stuff, and then all of a sudden that's what I end up doing. I end up shooting all this footage and having these guys send their stuff to me, and then I am putting all their footage in my computer, and I'm starting to put it together. And when I got to the end of part one, the Craiglon incident, I go, well, I got way too much footage. I'm going to have to make a part two. So I put together the part one with all the stuff, I had created, and it ended, where it ended was this thing called the World Conference, and that's what Debbie Rashan's in, and all these actors were all talking back and forth like a Zoom call, and it ended up right there, just a little less than 2 hours, and that was the first movie. And Kathy was asking me, what are you going to do about the rest? I go, well, I got to make a part two. And then she's like, oh, wow. So part one was done. And then I went ahead and got a duplicator, did all my packaging and everything, and then I had all this footage. So I said, okay, I have to finish the movie now. And I got to the end of the movie, and I go, I'm going to have to make a part three. I got so much footage. And then and finally part three, and people are even on the internet going, you can make part four, part five, part six. And my wife is like, no, he can't do anything else. Can you just spend time with me? I never see him anymore. He just edits all the time. So, yeah, part three ended it, and there's already been a couple people because the movie came out, like, last week, and I was putting it out, and people are buying it and stuff, and they're all getting it, and they're all like, yeah, I loved it, So when are you doing part four when you go to Vegas? And I'm like, no, that's a ruse. Originally I said at the end of whenever, there will be these monsters at the end saying they're going to get the team of the good guys, but it just took three movies to finally get there, and I was going to change the ending for part three. My wife said, why don't you just do what you said you were going to do with all the monsters? And I go, you know what? I need to stick with what I said I was going to do. So I went out and shot that ending, but people seem to really like it. They're like, oh, I love the ending. And even though it's hokey and cheesy, but it's supposed to be that way. There's a scene in there where
That's part of the charm of it, right? I mean, sometimes you want to watch a silly, silly monster movie. I grew up with those, you know, the 50s.
Look at Godzilla, and even as cool as Creature from the Black Lagoon is, you look at it now back, but, you know, some of those other movies from the 50s and the Giant Mantis and any of the King Kong things, but this one I intentionally made it that I wasn't trying to make it like, oh, this is going to be a great Star Trek movie. No, there's a scene in there where the agent says to one of his agents, that the double-crossing agent or whatever, he's talking to him and he goes, you are a waste of space and I will incinerate you. And then he goes, prepare to be decimated. And then he puts his hand up in the air and he throws his finger down to hit the button, which would be the destruct button. I did the destruct button on a little sticky note. I made a circle and I colored it in red and I put evil switch to kill my enemies, and he pushes that, and I did that way back 2 years ago, but even then, when I looked as more elaborate as I was getting, because I got a guy in Australia that was doing all my special effects, I could have done something really cool with a button and great, you know, stuff. And I said, no, that's the way it was intended to be. That button was to be so people would say, that's a sticky nose with the picture of a button on it. That's the humor of it. That's my kind of humor.
Yeah.
And that's what's in the movie. It's just supposed to be a silly, fun movie. Towards the end, it's got a lot of effects in part three that Gerardo did and time travel stuff. And but to me, that was just a lot of fun to do. And Phil told me, he watched it, he goes, man, you put a lot into this. He goes, me and Nancy were kind of getting lost. We're going, wait a minute, he went back in time and he fixed this, but he goes back in time. And then we finally figured it out. We were like, yeah, he made that really complicated. But that's it, you know, I wanted to do that. I was just having so much fun with it.
Yeah. So I think it's time to introduce your better half, of course, Kathy, because you were saying that she was yelling at you about editing and that. And I thought we'd bring Kathy on for a little bit because Kathy actually won an award this year, and I want to congratulate her.
Oh, thank you. That's what I told her too. And she, I'm trying to remember what she had, and I can let you tell her, I can let her tell you about it, but a movie that came out that really showcased her talent. I told her, I go, damn, baby, you're really good in this. This is like you're big. Like, she did a bunch of characters in the Craig Line Incident, but they're fun and they're happy-go-lucky or whatever, and she did great there. But this other thing was like because when the guy got done with the movie and it showed in the theater, Michael Kenneth Farr, I took him aside and I go, man, this movie is fucking awesome, man. This is really good. And Kathy plays a very big part in that. And, you know, I told her over and over again, I go, baby, I'm really proud of you. This is really good. But, you know, a lot of her stuff, what she can bring to her character, and I hope I've, you know, helped her with that, you know, along the way, saying, you know, hey, this is what I would think. Because I've had her when we're shooting something for me, and she'll go, oh, I'm going to do this. And I go, hey, look, I'm not your husband now. I'm the director, so you need to listen to what I'm telling you. Okay. I'm trying to run her through a fight scene. I'm like, no, honey, that's terrible. This is how you need to do it. So this is how you throw a punch. This is how you throw a front kick. This is how you don't kick the other actor in the face. So, yeah, so when I see her stuff, I'm like, I was just watching because somebody wanted a copy of Always Midnight, and I happen to have one, so I'm sending it out to them, and I go, yeah, I want to watch this. I haven't seen it in like 10 years. And I watched that, and her scene in Killer Arnold is really good. Again, doing a really great job with the acting. And so I've always told her, I said, baby, you're really doing a good job. Let me see if she's right here. Hang on.
Okay. As you can listen to Joel, he just is a mile a minute and such energy. One of the great people to just churn out wonderful, wonderful, humorous, good stuff. A couple movies I would suggest would be Bad Cop, No Donut, and he's just phenomenal in that. And just really good stuff. And I have not yet seen I have not yet seen the Craig Line Incidents, but I'll get them on order and that, but you're listening to one of the good people here. And just wanted to really thank Joel as we wait for Kathy. Hopefully she'll come very quickly here.
She's outside with her Mustang right now, but I told her when she gets done to please come inside. You'd like to speak with her. She's like, okay.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about the awards you got, because you, for the last 3 years, you've gotten awards at Tampa Bay, and tell us a little bit about that.
That's, it's a magazine here, kind of like a newspaper magazine, I guess. It comes out once a week. It's called Creative Loafing, and it's here in Tampa Bay, and what they have every year, it's around August, they do a thing called Creative Loafing's Best of the Bay, and people can, nominate people, like you might nominate the best pizza place, you might nominate the best restaurant, the best, bar. And for us, it was, you could nominate the best actor, the best actress. Well, actress, that's an old thing where people said actress. Actor is an actor. Actor is a male. Actor is a female. So actor. So best actor, best filmmaker, best drummer. And I was nominated, 3 years ago. I was nominated before that, but I never won. And on this 3 years ago, I took the best filmmaker back. Did I get best actor? Filmmaker I got. And then the next year I think I got best actor and best filmmaker. And the next year I got best actor and filmmaker. And here's Kathy. I'm going to let you talk to her.
Kathy.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. First off, I want to give hello from Rachel. Rachel could not be with us tonight, but Rachel absolutely adores you. Rachel is my co-host. But first off, I wanted to congratulate you on your Best Actor Award in Tampa Bay. That's wonderful. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the film and how it felt to get the award and all that sort of good stuff?
Like Joel was saying, it was a Creative Loafing, Best of the Bay, and he's won, I think, Best Filmmaker the last 3 years, and then Best Actor the last 2 years, and he's been nominated a lot of times. And then I just sort of found out last year that I had gotten nominated, and I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of, wow. and it was a friend of mine that did it, and I thought that was really nice. And then I think last year they did it a little bit differently in years past. It's like, it used to be just here's the nominations, and then go out and vote. And this year they did it to where you got the nominations, but then they wanted people to vote on the nominations so that those would be the people that you could vote for. And I want to say to 20, maybe 10 per category. I'm not really sure. And I thought, I probably won't get past this, but okay. And then I ended up as one of the people that you could vote for. And I was really surprised, like, oh, wow, okay. That's cool. And then I just kind of tried to promote it. It's sort of like, I don't want to say it's a fan thing, but it's public people's choice. Let's put it that way. So people have to vote for you, And so Joel helped me promote it a lot. I was promoting a lot, asking people, hey, because you want to vote like every day. So again, I was like hopeful, but I wasn't sure. And then probably after the contest ended, they let you know that you're one of the finalists. And so you're like in the top three. And I was like, oh, wow, that's awesome. I didn't even think I'd get that far. Because there is one person in the town that was a finalist, and she's, I think her name is Eugenie Bondra. I don't know if I'm saying it right, but she was in Hunger Games, and she's an acting coach, and I'm thinking, okay, she's got, way more people that are going to vote for her, but I was just excited to be in the finals, and then, when we got down there, you just basically, you go up, you're like, hey, I was a finalist, did I win the award, and they look, and they found Joel's, and they're like, oh, we don't see any viewers, so I was like, oh, okay, so I figured I was, runner-up two or three, so then we get the magazine, or the the paper and we're looking at it, and I'm like, it says I won. I won the first. It's like, we'll go by and ask her again. And I'm like, oh, sure. And she goes, oh, wait, let me look. Oh, yeah, here you go. And I'm like, well, okay, thanks, you know. So, but it was really exciting because, you know, to be, a lot of people just look at me and they're like, oh, it's Joel's wife. But I've been in, like, over 60 films, you know, and I've been doing this for 20 years, so it's nice to actually be recognized finally as something more than just, I'm very happy to be Joel's wife, but it's nice to be recognized as more than that.
So. Absolutely. And tell us the name of the movie that you won for, because we don't even know yet.
It's just Best Actress for the Year. It wasn't over any specific
movie. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Joel was talking about a specific film that you were in that he thought you were very good.
Well, he's probably thinking of Inheritance because he really liked the way I was in that movie, most likely. I did Inheritance. We shot it in 2019, and it's not, to my knowledge, yet been released on any type of form like DVD or streaming or anything because the filmmaker, who is Michael Kenneth Farr, wanted to put it in a lot of film festivals, which it's been in
right.
for like the past year. So I think he's done with the festival circuit at this point. So hopefully he's looking to get it distributed because I'd like to sell it.
Well, you gotta let us know when that is available for streaming or for VOD. So we'll definitely. And I wanted to tell you something else too, as far as the awards are concerned. Joel, of course, always posts those and says to vote on Facebook. We at Deviant Legion always make sure that we post that for you, too. And we do as much as we can to help you guys out. So, because
thank
we
you.
Love
That's
you both. I mean, seriously.
Oh, thank you.
You guys are great.
Thank you. It was just exciting because, like I said, I'm always... He's won a lot of awards, and I'm always very happy to be there with him, but it was just nice to actually win the award for myself.
Well, you know, just like anything else, Kathy, you've done
yeah.
all this work over the last 20
sure.
years.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of nice to get an appreciation and say, hey, you've done good work. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, even if you're working in a corporate job like I did for a number of years, you know, to hear someone says, yeah, you do a good job. That's a good thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it's nice to be
so good. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I just said it's nice to be appreciated no matter what you do.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to ask to get back with Joel, but we definitely did want to say congratulations on the award and keep entertaining us because, you know, you're very, very good and everyone that I know who has seen, you know, both your and Joel's work are just thrilled with it. So we're always happy to promote anything you do, and we love having you guys on.
Well, I know, obviously, you know, Craig 1-3 is out. I am in Horror Tales as well, Horror Tales 3, which I think is supposed to come out this summer. I wasn't real clear on when that was going to come out. And I'm actually shooting two things coming up here. I think it was in a couple weeks. I'm in, it's called Satan Lives, but it's with Joel, and I think Sean Donahue is doing it. And then I have to shoot scenes for the Blue Hole, which is David Castiglione. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right. And that, I'm looking forward to doing that, too, because there's some effects in it, so I think that'll be fun. I kind of like when I get to play something that's more than just a wife or a girlfriend, which is,
mm-hmm.
like, hard. I'm not playing that. I'm not playing that in the Blue Hole, and I definitely wasn't playing that in Inheritance, which is probably why Joel likes it. I'm kind of the bad guy in Inheritance, so that's a lot of fun. Always fun to play that.
Okay. Good, good. Well, we look forward to seeing you again and keep us informed. And anytime you guys want to, you know, have new projects out and that sort of thing, just let us know. We'll get you on. So I'm going to ask to get Joel back on the phone. And again, congratulations, Kathy.
Thank you, and thank you, tell Rachel thank you as well. I appreciate the sentiment, and I'm sorry she couldn't be here.
Yeah, trust me, if she were here, she'd be fawning over you like crazy.
Aww,
absolutely.
So
I have to do it for her.
Joel just stepped out for a minute. I think he's, of all things, washing his hands, but he should be back here in a second. So I had to step out of the house for a second. Sorry. I did hear him come back in. I just hear water running, so I think he's washing his hands. So it might be a minute.
I understand. So let me ask you this while we still have you on.
Sure.
You know, you did all this as an actress. Have you done any behind-the-scenes works, too, for Joel? And I'm sure you have at one point or another.
Yeah. On a lot of things that we've done, I will hop in as script supervisor to help people out. Like, I know there was one movie where I think I had done all my scenes in a day, and then I was pretty much done. So I was like, well, I'll just help, you know, on this end of it. I do that a lot. In this movie, in Craiglon, I made him buy a tripod because I just can't hold a camera very steady, and I got tired of holding the camera. I really despise directing. He had me do that on a couple of things, and I cannot stand that. So that's one thing I actually don't ever want to do.
Okay.
Camera work is okay. I don't mind it, but... yeah, I've done a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. I've done some stunts, which is always fun. Like, we did a movie called, or a short called Dead End, and I got to fight a lot, and that was so much fun. But to be honest, all of my co-stars made me look really good. Like, they made me look like I was kicking their butt better, more than me actually doing it. So... I will say, oh, hey, Joel, he's ready for you. Okay, he's coming. Sorry. I was like, where did he go? I thought I heard him coming. But,
well,
yeah,
you know,
so.
We like to keep these things homey, you know, and that's, we do.
He does, you know? Joel does a lot more of it. Like, he'll write. I don't really care to write. I will give him lines or, like, names and things like that, but, he will do the directing and stuff like that. But I do a lot. And a lot of times you're just there, so you're just like, I'm more time management, if I can even say that, because I'm like, hey, come on, we got to get out of here. Remember, let's move along. Let's get going. You know, I try and keep them on task. That's my main thing, is keeping Joel on task.
That's basically a full-time job, I would think.
I actually
call him the micro-budget whirling dervish because he never stops.
Absolutely. He it's funny, too, because he'll be like, I'm going to take a break, and I'm like, uh-huh, okay. For how long? An hour? A minute? A day? Yeah, so hopefully, I know he's got three movies plus the fourth one is helping me. He'll be doing my camera work on that.
Oh, that cool.
But maybe I can just get him to work for other people right now, and then he can kind of have more time to himself. I don't like it when he edits. He's
yeah,
long.
See. He was talking about that. That was one of the reasons, because I could just imagine you, like, saying, no more editing!
Yeah, you have no idea. I really don't like editing, and I don't like him editing, and I'm like, oh my god, I'll be like, what are you doing now? You said it was done. Why are you in there now? So yeah. Well, here he is.
Well,
I will give over to him.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.
Hey, buddy.
Andy's almost back. There he is.
Yeah, one of my other jobs. It's not really a job. I just do it on my own. I don't have to do it. But we live across from a park, and I go out every night and close the gate and make sure everybody's gone and no prostitutes are out there and no drug dealers are out there and no anybody's, and nobody's supposed to be out there after dark. So I go out and close up the gate to make sure everybody's gone. So as soon as you took Kathy, I said, well, let me run and do that. I got a break. I'll go do that.
Well, it was nice to have Kathy on. So, Joe, is there I think at this point now, we're going to give you a little bit of time to promote your films and how do people watch them and how do people buy them and all that sort of good stuff. So why don't you give us a little bit of promotion here?
Well, first there was nothing in 96. All of a sudden, the internet, I think it was 96, the internet opened up. We're doing it. Well, a lot of people, but I say Tim and I, because when we were doing our movies and stuff, there wasn't Facebook, there wasn't MySpace, there wasn't even the internet. We were just trying to put our movies out there, you know, through Ron Bronk and then it was called Salt City Home Video. Now it's SRS. But then, you know, that's who we were. Like when we sent him Creep, Ron was like, Ron, I quoted Ron as saying this way back then. He goes, "This is the best shot on video movie I've ever seen." Was Creep. And for 1996, and you know, then that's all you had. And before you had the distributors that were really picking up stuff, because even when we got Jeff to look at our original Twisted Illusions and look at the Truth or Dare short, there wasn't a lot of those. That's why Tim and I were kind of credited for bringing, you know, that kind of video revolution in with our movie Truth or Dare. But even before that, Twisted Illusions. And along with Blood mm-hmm. Cult and some other ones. But there wasn't any way to put your work really out there. Of course, we had the Fangoria ad when it did come. But now, you know, then they came up with MySpace, and everybody's like, "Oh, MySpace." And then Facebook came in, and then I was like, "What's this Facebook thing?" And then all of a sudden, you can put your movies on there and your trailers, and you can promote, and then your people are sending you friend requests, and you're sending them friend requests, and it's all filmmakers. And pretty soon you got all these people on your Facebook, and you can say to them, "Hey, if you want to buy a movie from me, here's some of my movies, or here I am," or I've got people writing me that say, "Hey, Joel Weinkoop, I saw you in Dirty Cop, No Donut. You know, you were awesome. I love that movie." Or I saw, "Are you kidding me? I saw you way back in Screaming for Sanity, and I love that movie." And so you get those people, and the same with me. When I'm talking to people and I see somebody, I go, "Oh, dude, James L. Edwards, I saw you in such and such a movie. This is cool." And we're all enabling each other, you know, to talk to each other. And then, of course, the, you know, don't even start me on Indiegos. And I remember when that first came out, I was working on a movie called Bane. Well, I passed on it. It was supposed to be my movie, but some other younger kids got involved. And I was like, "You know what? You guys just take this movie and do whatever you want with it." And so I stepped away from it. But even then, there was like, it wasn't an Indiegogo. It was like the first ones that ever came out where you make money by asking people for money and right. promote your movie or whatever. It was the very first one, and they were doing it then. And but then like three or four more have come since then, Indiegogos and the other ones. And I never did any. I did it to help Tim Ritter and Scott Tepperman when they were talking about Truth or Dare 5 before, before we were even shooting it. And Tim was like, "Hey, if you can do a little thing on there." I go, "Well, I don't like to do those because it seems like begging for money." I'm just like, "You know, you're begging for money." And he goes, "Well, because people do it because they want to do it." And I go, "Yeah, but I have the same argument with my wife when people say, here, if you want to buy me something from my wedding, here's our list." And I go, "A begging list?" And my wife's like, "It's not begging." I go, "It's kind of like begging if you say, I want this blender and I want this thing for the baby and I want these bows to hang on the wall." I go, "That's a begging list." She goes, no, it's not a begging list." So I was always like, I don't want to do this, but I did it for Tim Ritter and Scott Tepperman because when we were doing the Truth or Dare 5 thing, it had nothing to do with me. I was just acting in it. So I did that. I kind of helped them promote it, and I would say, you know, if you send this in and send this money, and you're going to get three karate kicks from me, and I'm going to talk about, you know, Dan Heston, Truth or Dare, or whatever. But I did that all for Scott and Tim. It's not like I was getting anything out of it. So, mm-hmm. And I still see other people doing it, and I said, you know what? I'm uncomfortable with doing that. So what I will do to get me some financing, just like everybody does Indiegogo, all I'm going to say is, when I was doing Craiglon, I said, you know what? If you buy one movie from me, I'm going to put your name in my movie as a producer. If you buy three, I'm going to put your name in my movie as an executive producer. If you buy 10 movies from me, I'm going to put you in with a title card at the beginning of the movie, and I'm going to make you an executive producer, which puts your name in there. And then everybody loves being connected to IMDb. Now, someone like, you know, I've done a lot. I think you were saying 200. I think it's closer to like 186. But, so, I'm like, yeah, if I get another IMDb credit, great. But then there's other people that don't have nothing, or they have one, and they're like, oh, I get an IMDb credit. Whoa! You know, and that's great for them. So I say that as a secondary thing, and you'll get your IMDb credit. And that's what they seem to really like. But the thing is, the way I do it, I'm not selling that. I said, just for instance, I'll say, buy this copy of Lost Faith. It's $20. I pay the shipping. So really you're paying, well, you're still paying $20, but you don't have to pay the shipping on top of the $20. And then, and I mail it out to you immediately. If I get the order that day, I send it out the same day. I don't say, okay, I'll send it out in 5 days on Friday when I do everybody else's. No, I do mine immediately. So I say, you buy the movie. Now, the icing on top of it, I'm going to give you an IMDb credit. I'm going to put your name at the beginning of the movie, which actually I put them at the beginning of the movie and the end of the movie just because I thought it was a nice, cool thing to do for them. So they're not, like, giving me money to be in the movie. They're just buying a movie from me, and all this other stuff is icing on the cake. They give me $20. There's your movie for $20. Oh, by the way, I'm going to give you a producer credit at the beginning of the movie and at the end of the movie. So, and I'll put you on IMDb. Oh, wow, cool. So, I'm not saying like the other ones that might be Indiegos, or they might say like, well, give me $50 and I'll sell you a lollipop with the name of the movie on it. I don't do that. I still even think of that. I'm like, I don't know. It's, you know. And some of the other ones, some of them have got the little scantily clad girls, and they're like, well, I'll send you some of my soiled panties if you give us $400. And I'm like, I guess if there's people out there that want that, but I don't have anything that where I'm asking somebody, give me $100 and I'm going to give you, you know, this lollipop with the name of the movie on it. I'm just going to say, buy the movie, and this is what's going to come with the movie. You're not buying anything from me but the movie, and then I'm just giving you stuff on top of that movie. So you really can't lose, you know. Between Craig Line Incident 1, 2, and 3, you know, I've got 50, 60 producers and executive producers and title card holders, all these different people that they just bought movies because they want to watch movies, and the credit is just icing on the cake. So, you know, that did really, you know, good for me, the way I did it, opposed to running, you know, like I said, like an Indigo, which there's nothing wrong with that, but I just prefer to do it the way I'm doing. I sell you something, and I just give you something for free, you know. I don't know.
I remember put out an ad on Facebook or an announcement on Facebook, and I put it both at Incredibly Strange Films and Film and Stuff. Hopefully you got a couple of people from there that bought movies that were your producers. I don't know if you did, but you know, we always try to do that for you and help you out. And that's what I said with Kathy too, that, you know, certainly we try to make sure that people know, you know, what you're doing and promote you and that sort of thing. So if people do want to buy your movies, how do they do it? Do they go to SRS or do they go to your Facebook page or how do they do it?
Well, I do ask people and I talk to all my distributors. I talk to Ron at Sub Rosa Studios, you know, all the time. And I talk to, I'm forgetting their names, but I talk to at Wild Eye, I think it's Rob. I talk to him and all the other distributors. Because it was neat when I started, because every time a movie would come out, it would come out with another distributor. So, like, for Demon, I think it was Wild Eye had it, or Brain Damage had it. Darren had it from Brain Damage. He had Demon. So I would get in touch with Darren. I'd go, hey, Darren, it's Joel. And he'd be like, hey, Joel, how's it going? Cause so a lot of these distributors know me because I'm doing a lot of movies and stuff. So I would tell Darren, I would go, hey, I want to get, you know, 20 copies of Demon because I play the sheriff in that. He goes, oh, yeah, let me turn you on to, you know, Valerie and Sales or whatever it was. And he would shoot me an email and then send me to the right girl, and I would write the girl, and I would say, look, hey, I want to pick up 20 copies. What kind of deal can you do me? And then because I'm buying 20 copies opposed to one, this is what I say to a distributor in town. I go, What did you do better on? Did you do better from selling one movie to that guy? Or did you do better selling 20 of the movies at a discount to me? And the answer is always the same thing. Well, the 20 movies from you at the discount. I go, yeah. I go, don't people get that? So I would call Darren and get 20 Demon. And then I would call, you know, Wild Eye and talk to Rob there and say, hey, I want to buy 50 copies of Clownado. And I'll get a discount. And then I get these when I can. And then but a lot of these things are out of print. I have them, but nobody else has them. So even some of, you know, Ron's movies, maybe, he might not have any more right now. He'd be like, oh, those are, you know, like, for instance, 30 Cop No Donut, you can't get that anymore. I think Ron will probably do something in the future, but right now you can't. You want to get a copy of Dirty Cop No Donut, you got to come to me. And that's fine with Ron, because Ron and Darren and Jason is another one in Minnesota with Strip Club Slasher. He gave me his permission. He goes, Joel, that's it. You're my cop in this. This is as much of your movie as mine. But I also like to promote everybody, so I buy them through Jason. I think I just bought 50 copies of Strip Club Slasher. And I'll take them, but I'm not going to wallpaper my room with them. I'm going to, you know, put the movies out there. I'm going to sell the movies, and I'm not hoarding them to look at them. I buy them. I recently told a distributor, I go, he's like, well, I don't want you to sell these movies. And I go, what do you think I was going to do, wallpaper my house with them? I'm going to sell them. That's what I bought them for you, from you. So, so what I ask is, you know, my website's down. One guy was working on it, and he just quit on it and didn't do no more. And then I'm like, you know, I do more stuff on Facebook than anything. So I just tell people, it's so simple. Go on Facebook. You look up my name, Joel D. Weinkoop. You send me a friend request. And the first thing I'll ask somebody is like, hey, got your friend request. Thank you so much. How did you hear of me? Now, I ask that because a lot of people just get hacked on Facebook, and or it's a girl saying, hey, you want to look at my tits for $100? No, not really. No offense, but I don't want to look at your tits. Sorry, that's not why I'm here. So I want to know. And that's when they'll tell me, are you kidding? I saw you in Creep, and I saw you in Wicked Games, and I loved you in Dirty Cop No Donut. And I'm like, oh, cool. I just wanted to make sure, you know, you're here and you're real, and if you're not selling your tits or something. So I'm like, yeah, cool, and I accept them. And then they're looking at my stuff, and they're like, man, I really like this copy of Creep. And I go, okay. And I always give where you can get them. I can say, you know, Ron Bonk, SRS Studios, he's our distributor. Go see Ron, and then you can come see me. You can contact Tim Ritter. You know, and then if I'm doing, I got something with Ryan Cavallini, I'll say, look, get a hold of Ryan Cavallini or get a hold of Rob at Wild Eye. Talk to them. But I'm also in this market, too. It's like what I always say when people say, like, well, you know, we're doing it, and you shouldn't do it. No, this is free America, man. Everybody has a right, you know, to make a sale or do whatever they're doing, or whether it's selling their movies or if they're selling, you know, fishing rods. Everybody has a right to do that. But I just do it. The way I do it, though, I let everybody know. I let Ron know. I'm in constant contact with Ron Bonk with SRS Studios. And like I said, and I talk to the other guys, all the other distributors, because they know. I'll send them something. I'll go, hey, I can't think of a movie right now that just came out, but I might say, like The Auto Show when I did that. Media Blasters had that. I wrote Media Blasters, and I go, hey, I'm Joel Weinkoop. I play Fred Finagler in The Auto Show. Can you give me a deal? I want to pick up 50 copies. Well, yeah, they're not going to say, okay, they're $28 a piece. They're going to say, no, we'll sell them to you for X amount of dollars. You're going to buy 50 of them. And they know I'm going to resell them. They're not going to say, okay, we're going to sell you 50, but we don't want you to sell any for, you know, a year. That'd be stupid. So, but again, I don't get all 50 copies and then sell them in a day. Those 50 copies are going to last me probably a couple years, and I'll take them to shows with me. And as this time is elapsing, the distributors may have sold all their movies, and now they're gone. They don't have them anymore. And that's when people can say, and I've had people do this, hey, Joel, I was told to contact you because I want to get a copy of Always Midnight. I found one recently, and I go, oh, I could, you know, yeah, somebody wants an Always Midnight. I just sold one the other day. And I can do that because they might know that I've got these things that are just out of print. And the same with Phil Herman. I mean, if somebody wants, they say, well, let me, and I'll tell them that. I go, look, Phil, they wrote me and said, I think Jacker 2. I said, I have Jacker 1, I have Jacker 2, but so does Phil. It's Phil's movie. Go see Phil first. You know, if you can't get fulfilled with Phil, then come back to me. So I always give those options first of other people. Go see Ron. Go, you know, go see Brad. Go see these other guys. They got them too. But like I said, a lot of them, Demon, out of print. Crazed, out of print. Show, out of print. A lot of these movies that are out of print, I have them. I might be the only one, you know, and then otherwise then there's some people that sell them on eBay. So, yeah, to answer the biggest question, when someone says, hey, where can I get one of Joel's movies? Come see me on Facebook. I have lots of people that say, hey, I got your movie from blah, blah distributor and blah, blah distributor. I said, well, anytime if you want to get them from the guy that made the movie, please come see me too. I'd like to be, you know, out there with my distributor friends too. But we all have a right, you know, to be selling it. But and then I tell people, well, when you buy it from me, first of all, I always toss in something extra. I just made a whole bunch of new discs tonight. It's my Super 8 movies. It's called When I Was Young, the Super 8 movies of Joel D. Weinkopf. It's 2 hours of all my Super 8 movies, not all of them, but a lot of them, from back in the 70s and 80s. And I just thought people would kind of get a kick out of that. They all got titles and they got commentaries on them from 1984 and from 2022. And so I make it something extra if they buy it from me. And then, of course, I wrap my stuff incredibly great so no harm comes to it. I had one guy pulling out stuff, and he goes, oh, I got this is in here, and then I got this, and these bags, and then the movie, and then all this stuff underneath it. He goes, you really packed this. And I go, yeah, because I get stuff sometimes, and they come broken in the mail, and then I'm pissed off. I got a smashed DVD because somebody just sticks it in an envelope and sticks it in the mail. Comes from New York. It's been bashed around, run over by trucks, and I get it. It's all crushed. My stuff, yeah, my stuff would have to be run over by a truck because I protect it very well. So, yeah, and then so I tell people, you know, come to me, and then if you want me to sign it, I'll sign it too. So if somebody wants it autographed, you know, and they're buying from the distributor, they can get it, and they go, oh, I wish I could get an autograph on that. You know, I can do that. And I don't think my distributor friends sell way more than I would. So, you know, I'm in the business with them, but I just don't have their – like Ron Blanc has an awesome SRS, you know, studios you know, the website and how his stuff comes out and his thing. I don't want to do all that. I just got some movies where Ron's selling like 500. I might sell 10, you know, and that's all I'm looking for. I'm not, you know, looking to become a million. It'll never happen. But it's an option for people if they want something from me. All they have to do is go to Facebook, send me a friend request, or maybe we're already friends, and just say, hey, Joel, can I get a copy of The Bite? And I'll go, yeah, well, The Bite I recently sold to Donald Farmer. Donald, let me know how that's going. But I still have some left over. I think I had like 50 copies left over when I signed the contract. And I asked Donald, I said, the only thing I want to sell this, I want in the contract, I want to sell my existing stock, and I want to keep control of the character's name. And but those are the things. If somebody wants one of my movies, you know, yeah, go to all the distributors if you want, but this is what I'm going to give you if you come to me. You know, I'm going to give you a little extra stuff. I'm going to package it really well, and I'll sign it for you, and I might have posters or stuff like that I'll throw in. So, you know, yeah, go to the distributors, but I've got a lot of stuff that our distributors don't have no more because they're gone. When I had Darren about Demon, he goes, Joel, he goes, honestly, it just wasn't a very good movie. We're not gonna make any more discs. And I understand that. So I've got my discs of Demon. So if someone said, hey, I can't get this movie anywhere, someone could say, hey, go see Joel Weinkopf. He's got a lot of these movies that nobody has. So right. I don't know. That's how I do it. I do it on Facebook.
Yeah, so to our listeners, the basic thing is to contact Joel, and he'll get you in the right direction. Now, at this point, I want to just have you hold on, Joel, for a second, and we're going to do a little bit of what I like to call house cleaning. So give me a minute here. I have to get to the right place. Just a second, because my computer blacked out here. Okay, so what we're going to be doing on Deviant Legion in the upcoming days, Okay, so tomorrow we premiere a new show with Eric Omland and Joey Bento and their alter egos, Doc and Groupbeard's Graveyard Examiner, and that's going to be their first show, and they're going to be focusing on specifically horror movies and science fiction movies from the 40s to the 60s. And so they're going to be doing that. On Friday, Cathode Ray Mission and Ferenz is going to be doing a deep dive into the TV show, animated show, Samurai Jack. On Saturday, we have John Julian joining Rachel and myself. We're going to do a commentary watch on Larry Cohen's The Stuff. Then in the next week on Wednesday at 12 noon, we're going to be having a conversation with author Joe Lansdale. Joe, of course, is wrote Bubba Hotep, An Incident on an Off a Mountain Road. He also did the Hap and Leonard series of books, which was made into a Sundance TV show. Joe's a great guy, and we're going to have him on next week. We have some other things planned but not set in stone, so I can't really say anything yet. But we're going to be busy for April. Again, I want to thank both Joel and Kathy for being on with us today. One other thing I got to say about Joel before we go is that the man has, like, the most awesome birthday greeting ever. So if you ever have a birthday, ask Joel to wish you a happy birthday. It's friggin' awesome. And I got to say something, too, I know that you've done work with Stephen Ronquillo and doing the Halloween shows and the readings and that. And along with the birthday greeting, you're just so entertaining and so much fun. And as I said to Kathy, the two of you are welcome back anytime. We love you here, so it's great.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, at this point, I think it's time for us to say goodnight. Again, I want to thank you and Kathy. And at this point, let's just say goodnight, people, and thank you very much for listening. Good night, Joel.
Good night, sir. And thank you so much for everything from Kathy and I. Thank you so much. It's always awesome to be on here and talk with you. And I'm sorry we missed your other half. I tell her, Rachel, that I love her. And maybe we do this again when she's around. And I just think she's freaking awesome. The both of you are just great.
I will tell her that. And she thinks you two are awesome, too. All right, folks. Have a good night. Again, thanks, Kathy. Ken, thanks, Joel. And we'll see you tomorrow with Doc and Graybeard. Groupbeard. Graybeard. What am I thinking? Groupbeard. Okay, good night, people.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.